From the Centre for Public Christianity, you're listening to Life and Faith. I'm Natasha Moore.
And I'm Simon Smart.
It's one of those things that most of us think we know about, but might be hard-pressed to come up with any actual facts if we were asked. The Crusades. This is one of the best-known episodes of violence in the history of the Christian Church, but perhaps also one of the least understood.
Well, there's a series of popular misunderstandings about the Crusades that have got to do with attitudes of the past, but also current problems.
This is Christopher Tymon. He's a history professor at Oxford University, and he literally wrote the book, or rather books, on the Crusades, including an analysis of the common debates and controversies surrounding the topic.
The Crusades seem glamorous, they seem dramatic, they seem alien, they seem, in the West, in the UK or Australia or the US, they are seen as an example of medieval brutality in the name of religion. In other parts of the world, they have been rebranded as an example of early Western imperialism and colonialism. And both sides of that equation are false.
Now, don't worry. We're not going to try to give you a complete history of the Crusades in the next 15 minutes. But we at CPX have been travelling the globe, speaking to scholars about this, among other things, for our upcoming documentary, For the Love of God, How the Church is Better and Worse Than You Ever Imagined. And so we thought we'd muster some of their collective expertise to give you a bit of a clearer picture of this thousand-year-old history.
And a big part of that history, actually, is not just what happened at the time, but how it's been interpreted since then. Take, for example, the use of the word crusade.
If we talk about the medieval crusades, we generally conjure up all the myths of that, of this kind of religious zealotry, which is not quite the case.
This is Thomas Madden. He's a medieval historian at St. Louis University in Missouri.
The other way that we use the word crusade, however, really came about in the 19th century. And in the 19th century, the people began to use it to mean just any good enterprise, completely divorced from religion. Crusader, therefore, became a noble person who's doing something noble, but not for religious reasons. And we still hear that today. Someone is a crusader for adult literacy, or their crusade against some deadly disease.
The idea of a crusade then used to have positive connotations, but this meaning shifts after the 9/11 terror attacks, after the then US President George W. Bush says this.
This crusade, this war on terrorism, is going to take a while.
After the president used that word, he was roundly condemned for using a word that was hurtful and was incendiary. Then it was amazing. All of a sudden, the word stopped being used for anything except to mean the medieval campaigns. It was no longer used for any of the other things. In fact, some organizations began to change their names because they had the word crusade in them. Mascots were changed that previously were the Crusaders, suddenly became something else. But I think it's interesting that it only lasted about a year. After about a year, the use of the word went right back.
Even if we're just talking about the meaning of the word Crusades then, there's a long and complicated history to this. But let's go back to the start of the very first crusade.
Now, just to give some very basic background to this, the Crusades were a series of religious wars between the 11th and 15th centuries. There's your kind of garden variety sort of crusade where the Latin Christian Church in Europe mustered troops to go and win back the Holy Lands, the Middle East, following Muslim expansion in the area. Sometimes these were successful, more often not, actually. But crusades were also fought in other places and against other groups, even within Europe, against groups perceived as heretical, for example. So as Simon said, this history is long and complicated. But to start at the beginning, the first crusade was called in the year 1095 by Pope Urban II. He gave this big speech at a place called Clermont in France to launch the campaign. Here's Christopher Tymon again.
Urban II, who's Pope from 1088 to 1099, had a number of different motives for calling the First Crusade. One was he was asked by the Emperor of Eastern Christianity, the Byzantine Emperor Alexis I, he was asked to raise troops to defend Eastern Christians from Turkish invasions. That's one political reason. Urban himself had another reason. He was fighting a war of survival against a rival pope, and to portray himself as the leader of Christendom by raising troops and defending Eastern Christendom was obviously a big bonus, and it allowed him to assert a great deal of political clout in Western Christendom. Also, there's a third point, that Urban was very conscious of, in the 11th century, of Christians regaining lands that had been lost to Muslim invaders centuries before. You can see this in Spain, you can see this in Sicily before the First Crusade. So you have a combination of circumstances.
So right from the start, we stumble on one major misconception about these wars, that they were purely motivated by religion. Now, that's not to say that they weren't motivated by religion. Professor Tyman explains what's unique about them.
The Crusades are distinctive wars, not because they're religious wars, that's common, not because they're ideological wars, but because the combination of violence and what was offered by the popes for Crusaders, the remission of sins. So this was the idea that to fight a war was not merely justified, but actually was meritorious. Spiritually meritorious. You got time off purgatory. To fight and die on crusade, you went to heaven. So war was a penitential act. It was a good religious act, like giving alms or going on a pilgrimage, anything like that.
But this penitential aspect, the promise that soldiers could make up for their past sins by going and fighting in these wars, was only one element to the Crusades.
One thing has to be made clear from the very, very beginning. Up until the modern period, nobody had an idea of religion being something separate from other activities. Religion permeated all activities. So that if you tried, for example, to take religion out of what we call politics, it would be like trying to take the gin out of the cocktail.
That's Karen Armstrong. She's a religion writer, and her massive book, Fields of Blood, goes thoroughly into the historical relationship between religion and violence.
Look at the Crusades. This is an example of a holy war in Christianity, where the Crusaders marched to Jerusalem and slaughtered Muslims, all for the sake of God. They went into battle crying, God wills it. But it was entirely mixed up with politics. The Pope, when he called the Crusade in 1095, he had a very clear a political objective as well as a religious one. He wanted to extend the power of the papacy into the Eastern world of Christianity, which didn't accept papal supremacy. He was trying to build up a papal monarchy in which the Pope, and this would eventually happen, would become the chief ruler in Christendom.
So the idea that the Crusades was a simple matter of Christians against Muslims really doesn't cover the historical reality. Religion is definitely involved, and there's all sorts of seedy political machinations going on here. But to call it a holy war and leave it at that is to miss a lot of what's really going on.
Another misconception about the Crusades that many of us have is this idea of a powerful Christian West bullying a peaceful Muslim civilization in the Middle East. But Christopher Tyman tells us that our stereotypes are a bit misplaced.
There is this myth that these barbaric, violent Christians invade this Irenic, sophisticated, soft and cuddly Islamic world. Well, this isn't entirely true. In the generation before the First Crusade, the Islamic Near East had been invaded by Turks from the steppes with enormous violence, that the Near East in the 30 years before the First Crusade was a place of violence and mayhem, military rule. It was not a soft, cuddly, peaceful place. That's one of the reasons why the Crusaders could succeed. They entered an already violent and fractured political community, and they added one element to that.
Historian Thomas Madden says that actually it wasn't until much, much later that the Islamic Middle East took on this narrative of the Crusades as an attack of the violent colonising Christian West on their culture. In fact, the Crusades, until well into the 20th century, barely rated a mention in the Muslim world.
The legacy of the Crusades for the Muslim world is much harder to gauge. Since the Crusades failed, they failed to really harm any of the Muslim empires, and they failed to slow the progress of Islam, it's hard to see what the actual tangible effects would be on them. When we look at the Ottoman Empire, for example, in the 16th century, it controls 3/4 of the Mediterranean It's hard to say that that empire is being harmed in any way by the Crusades, or that Islam has been harmed in any way by the Crusades. And that's one reason why in Muslim history, at least before the modern age, the Crusades were virtually unknown. And that's largely because they were just too insignificant. In the vast scope of Islamic history, which stretches all across the Middle East and into India during the Middle Ages, the Crusades were the tiniest pinprick. And so they just weren't interesting enough for anyone to really know about. It's really only in the modern age that Muslims in the Middle East have really learned about the Crusades. Really after the colonialism post-World War I is when they learned about them.
You're listening to Life and Faith from the Center for Public Christianity. If you've just joined us, we're taking a closer look at the Crusades and what they were really all about. This is part two of our series featuring interviews from our upcoming documentary, For the Love of God, How the Church is Better and Worse Than You Ever Imagined.
Yes, we've been hearing from the experts about some of the common misconceptions people have about the Crusades. For example, that they were purely religious wars, or that it was a case of a strong Christian West bullying a peaceful Muslim East. People often say as well, a tad cynically perhaps, that the Crusades were basically a land grab, a ploy to gain access to more resources. Here's what Christopher Tyman has to say about that.
If you wanted to grab land, if you were a knight in France or Italy or Germany, if you wanted to grab land, why go 2,500 miles to a bare Judean hillside that actually was economically rubbish? There was a religious motivation. This didn't preclude the fact that you were going to get spiritual rewards and probably material rewards. You were going to be paid to go, for example. But the cost, the initial capital outlay to go on crusade was huge, many times a knight or a lord's annual income. So this investment was very heavy. It's hard to see many people making profits from simply going on crusade. There are attendant profits if you did get land in the East, or if you were a shipper that had a contract with crusaders, etc. But the motive to going on crusade was clearly not solely or even mainly material. There was this religious, ideological purpose. It was the right thing to do.
Historian Thomas Madden, we heard from him a little earlier, agrees. He says that one of the most common myths about the Crusades is that it was essentially a medieval form of colonialism.
That's a very common assumption. It's completely wrong. The Crusaders, they did leave their homes and they did march for thousands of miles away. But they did so as a direct response to Muslim conquests of Christians and Christian lands in the East. They were actually responding to calls for help from these Christians in the East.
This initial religious motivation for many Crusaders ties back to the idea that fighting in the Crusades was not only a response to pleas for help from Christians in the East who were being attacked and pushed out, but also a penance, making up for sins they'd committed. And the fact that many of the Crusaders were in fact professional warriors, they felt kind of burdened down by many sins and they felt they need to do penance for them.
Now, no Christian today would see things that way in terms of wrongdoing and forgiveness and so on. But that's what these knights were told. It's what they believed. And while their initial religious motivations may have led the Crusaders to believe that these wars were the right thing to do, even an act of charity, the reality of the Crusades was bloody and brutal.
Yes, one story that's really struck me as we've researched this was a bunch of Crusaders on the way to the First Crusade in 1096. They decide to just massacre communities of Jews in the Rhineland. And it had nothing to do with the claimed motivation of the Crusade. It just resulted in this completely gratuitous and frankly terrible violence.
The most famous of the massacres during the Crusades probably today is the massacre in 1099 in Jerusalem when the Crusaders conquered Jerusalem on the First Crusade. And then afterwards, a number of the people inside, mostly Jews and Muslims, in fact, all Jews and Muslims were massacred.
These are horrific stories of Christian soldiers acting in incredibly brutal and unmerciful ways. The historians, though, do also caution us not to believe everything we hear.
We often hear of the streets of Jerusalem running red with the blood of all of the people who were massacred. And those blood levels, depending on who you talk to, are at different levels. You see them at the ankle level or the knee level. The highest level is actually the withers of the horses, so that these men are literally kind of wading through this blood. Now, of course, there aren't enough people in the entire Middle East to bleed that much, let alone in Jerusalem. But the best research that's been done now on the massacres of 1099 have put the total dead at about 3,000.
So Professor Madden is suggesting that the brutality of the Crusades has also been exaggerated.
As far as the number of dead, though, I mean, even at 3,000, we might today say that seems like an enormous number of people to kill in a crusade. But in fact, the numbers that were killed during the Crusades, by modern standards, are minuscule.
Someone else who talks about this is William Kavanagh, theology professor and author of The Myth of Religious Violence. He says that yes, the Crusades were definitely brutal, but that they weren't peculiarly brutal.
I'm perfectly willing to say these are Christians behaving badly, but I also want to, I suppose, make a kind of plea for the idea that it's not really that different from other kinds of wars. This is being held out as something peculiarly brutal. But if you look at, for example, something very recent and very close to home, like the Guatemalan Civil War, where nearly 200,000 peasants were massacred by U.S.-supported troops, I don't think that the Crusades is something that is extraordinary in the annals of violence. And I don't think the fact that they're doing it because of their zealous Christian faith, I don't think that's essentially different than doing it for a kind of zealous anti-communism, for example.
Even if the brutality of the Crusades has been exaggerated or was not anything like as violent as we seem to manage to be today, still, the contrast between Jesus' teaching of love for enemies and mercy and justice and so on, and the massacre of 1099, for example, it's jarring to say the least. And it's important to get the history right and to not heed the exaggerations and the myths. But even after stripping all that back, there's a lot here to deplore and, I guess speaking as a Christian, to grieve over. This is not a noble episode of Christian history.
There's a sense in which you have to answer yes and no to the question of, is the Crusader really a Christian? On the one hand, I think normatively you have to say no. If you're a Christian, you want to say that this is a misunderstanding of what's really at the heart of the gospel. But descriptively or empirically, I think you have to say, yes, he's a Christian, and we can't simply wash our hands of responsibility by saying, Christians don't do violence because if they're really a Christian, they wouldn't do violence. I mean, clearly this is part of our history, and we have to own that.
If you look at any wars that have an ideological basis, resistance to fascism, whatever, the violence and the nobility go hand in hand. War is war. Motives are mixed. Actions are mixed. You can be violent and noble at the same time. And of course, in the culture of a society as Western Europe was, dominated by a military aristocracy, the values of the knight, the values of nobility, bravery, courage, etc., are ingrained as a social good.
The tragedy of human beings is we have these wonderful ideals, but we also fail constantly to live up to them. We're forked and divided creatures. We never act purely for religious motives.
From the Centre for Public Christianity, you've been listening to Life and Faith with Simon Smart and Natasha Moore. We hope you're feeling a little less confused about the Crusades. This is an important episode in Western history, and it's often invoked in debates today about politics and religion and the Middle East. So it's good to get a handle on the facts.
This was the second part of a four-part series featuring interviews from our documentary coming out next year, For the Love of God, How the Church is Better and Worse Than You Ever Imagined. To catch up on part one, The Evolution of the West, it's available on our website, publicchristianity.org, or you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Just type CPX in the search box to find us. Next week, we continue the series with a focus on the church's record in relation to women. Join us then.